Good morning, everybody. My name is Emily Christ. I work with Climate Forecast Applications Network. And today I'm going to talk about a paper that was published in the Agronomy Journal this year titled Predicting Heat Stress in Cotton Using Probabilistic Canopy Temperature Forecasts. First, I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Peter Webster of Georgia Tech, Dr. John Snyder of the University of Georgia, Dr. Violetta Toma of Climate Forecast Applications Network, Dr. Derek Oosterhaus of the University of Arkansas, and Dr. Daryl Chastain of Mississippi State. I also want to acknowledge financial support from Cotton Incorporated and all of the work that employees at CM Stripling Irrigation Research Park put into the field portion of this experiment. I also want to acknowledge ECMWF for providing the atmospheric forecast data for this study, and then, of course, our university partners. Before I get into it, I just wanted to give you a little bit of background. You know, why would we decide to do something like this? Why is it important to predict heat stress for cotton? And for you guys, it's probably self-explanatory, but I'll go over it anyway. You know, for humans, we understand that heat stress can cause death and all kinds of ailments, and so we have the National Weather Service that predicts heat stress warnings for us as people. And so we recognize that crop losses can be very significant due to heat stress, and we thought that maybe this would be a good opportunity to develop some heat stress forecasts for cotton. So the first thing we had to do was really define what heat stress is, and it's a little bit more complicated than it may seem on the surface, because heat stress can be combined sometimes with water stress. So the first thing we did was make sure that the experimental plots were well watered. Another problem is that a lot of experiments measure air temperature and measure the crop's responses with respect to air temperature. But air temperature is not always a good indicator of canopy temperature, especially during time periods when relative humidity can be low. So we decided to define heat stress with respect to canopy temperature in something called the thermal kinetic window. The thermal kinetic window is actually based on the Michaelis constant of a very important metabolic enzyme. So it's sort of a chemical property of the plant. The TKW for cotton has been determined to be between 23 and 32 degrees Celsius. So we determined that cotton would be considered under heat stress if the canopy temperature was measured greater than or equal to 32. So the next thing we had to do is collect some field data. So we had measured canopy temperature data from here near Camilla, Georgia. This is where Stripling Irrigation Research Park is located, from 2013 and 2014. We also were fortunate to have a Georgia Automated Environmental Monitoring Network weather station on that site. So then we modeled canopy temperature using linear regression. Air temperature, vapor pressure, wind speed, and solar radiation were the variables. They were all statistically significant. You can see here is the equation that we wound up with. And these are just plots of the residuals that show that the assumptions for linear regression held. So we were pleased. We developed the model based on 2013 data. And during the year 2013, the temperatures were a little bit below normal at the site. Then we applied that canopy temperature model to 2014 to see what the fit would be, and we got a really nice R-squared value of 0.93. So the next thing we wanted to do was to develop canopy temperature forecasts for cotton. So how do we do that? We took forecasted variables using an atmospheric model, and then plug those variables into our canopy temperature equation. So the atmospheric model we used is the European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecast Ensemble Prediction System. It's kind of a mouthful, but you would probably be more familiar with its reference as the European model on most weather stations. So it is an ensemble model, so it produces 51 forecasts for each grid point. It has a 27-kilometer resolution. It's a global model, so we can go beyond 1 to 2 days with this, out to 10 days. And the European model actually produces forecasts on monthly and seasonal time frames as well. We had to do some conversion for this. We had to convert dew point temperature to vapor pressure, and we used a Fourier analysis to approximate hourly curves so that we could take our forecasts, which were issued on a 6-hourly schedule, and turn those into hourly forecasts. So this is what you get. You see that you get 51 forecasts for each hour. So there's a spread here. Okay, so that there's information in that. You can see that there's uncertainty at each hour. And depending on that spread, you can tell how certain the models are that temperature is going to be, in this case, 30 degrees C or not. The probability of heat stress was determined to be the number of ensembles that were greater than 32 divided by the total number of 51. So we determined that it was a correct forecast if heat stress was predicted for the day and heat stress was also observed. So then we went a step further and we said, okay, we want to apply a statistical bias correction, because a lot of times what happens with direct model output is that there can be some local effects that that make, you know, these weather models a little less accurate on a grid point by grid point measure. So what we did was we said, okay, we're going to take some historical data and we're going to use that to adjust this direct model output. So for example, this is the direct model output, and let's say that, okay, it's under forecasting high temperature. So we do this bias correction, and you can see in this, you know, just this little example, that the bias corrected forecasts help out a little bit with that, and the same thing on this portion of the graph. So the next thing we had to do is analyze the results, and we did that by putting the forecast into what's called a contingency table, and that divides forecasts into hits, false alarms, misses, and correct rejections. And we can use those to create what's called ROC diagrams. So you'll see this is the false alarm rate plotted against the hit rate. And if you look at this black line, anything to the left means the forecast was skillful. So you can see this is the direct model output. This is the bias corrected output. Both outputs were skillful. From 1 to 10 days over the forecast period, but the bias-corrected forecasts are a little bit closer to this upper left-hand corner, so their ROC areas were a little bit larger, so that means that they were actually more skillful than the direct model output. So that was good news for us. Then we also looked at what's called missed events. A missed event occurs when the forecast says it's not going to be a stressful day, but then it is a stressful day. So these would be very detrimental to farmers. So if you look here, this is the direct model output. You want the number of missed events to be low. So you can see here the comparison between the direct model output and the bias corrected output. The bias corrections actually lower the number of missed events. So we just took this information and we put it into a nifty graph to create a heat warning system. So we divided up the probabilities into warnings, advisories, watches, so on and so forth, and put them as and labeled them as colored stems on the plot. You can see this is the 32 degree threshold for heat stress, and these are the actual observations. So you can see the model did a pretty good job in picking up this lapse, although it did miss it on this snapshot. However, it predicted heat stress when heat stress didn't occur, so we consider that a little bit better than the converse. Also, you can see this snapshot of this hourly forecast that the model did very well at predicting when heat stress would occur. So what can we get from that besides these warnings? We took that a step further and we said, okay, we want to see if we can do a little bit of an economic analysis. So we wanted to be able to give something to farmers and producers that would say, okay, well, if you know, if there's an 80% probability that stressful conditions are going to occur over the next week, then should you do something to protect your crop or should you not? So we did that by calculating risk. Risk is, we define risk as the probability, the forecast probability times the cost of loss per event. So if the risk is greater than the cost, then we recommend action. So we would recommend action if the forecasts fall in this area. If the risk is less than the cost, then no action is recommended. That would be down here. So how did we determine the cost of loss? Well, we divided that up between the July time period, which is a more critical time period for reproduction, versus the August and September time period, which is a little bit less. So that's what these weights are about here. Then we divided yield categories based on a study that compared yield with heat stress. Okay, so that's how we got these three lines. And then we averaged, we came up with an average for a number of events in July versus the average of number of heat stress events in August and September. And then we multiplied that by the price of cotton. And we had data from 2013 and 2015 for those prices. Now, if you're wondering, well, how do we figure out what's the cost to protect? So the cost to protect is equal to an irrigation. So what we found is that right now some experts recommend a light irrigation to try to protect against heat stress. However, there are some compounds in development that we could easily fit into this equation. So for right now, we have this irrigation, and then we multiply it by the variable, the amount of irrigation multiplied by the variable cost of irrigation to come up with a value for the cost per event. And I'm going to skip this. So these are the graphs that track July risk and cost versus forecast probability. So during July, during the time period when reproduction is going on and cotton is a little bit more susceptible to heat stress, then you can see that the forecast probability doesn't have to be very high for us to recommend that you take action to protect your crop. Whereas in August and September, when the cotton is a little bit less susceptible to heat stress, the probabilities that we would recommend are a little bit higher. So just to go over a few implications, coupled atmospheric agricultural models have the ability to put weather forecasts in terms producers can understand and can quickly use to make strategic on-farm decisions. Probabilistic forecasts provide growers the additional opportunity to make better decisions based upon more weather information delivered in a concise and easy to understand format, and delivering reliable weather forecasts specifically designed to serve agricultural interests has the potential to make a large positive impact within the industry. And that's all. Models could be developed for other crops. Canopy temperature models, yes, they could. For as far as the thermal kinetic window, there have only been a few studies done, and it's specific crops that has been developed for. So if you want to go the exact route that we did, you would need canopy temperature, and you would also need the thermal kinetic window for the crop. The thermal kinetic window, I guess, it has already been, discovered in previous research. Does that make sense? You know, since my colleague from the University of Georgia did all the field work, I'm not very educated on the exact height that these canopy temperature measurements were taken.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.